on shortwave, satellite, and the internet. This is Media Network Plus.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome again to another edition of the program. Today, our topic is going to be on a specific country and something from that country. Now, let me play you this and let's see if you can guess what it is. Well, if you guessed North Korea or the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, you're absolutely correct. Now, many of you who are shortwave listeners will probably know Radio Pyongyang. And of course, that interval and that national anthem of the DPRK began each broadcast. Not just overseas broadcasts, but also television and domestic radio. A number of years ago, our special guest on this program was one Mark Fahey. Now, Mark Fahey released the music that is used for a fire drake, the infamous or famous Chinese jammer. He discovered the signal on satellite and made it available in studio quality for download. Now, that interview that we did made the rounds in some very interesting places. In fact, Radio Free Asia even referred to it a number of times, along with the BBC World Service, when we discussed the Fire Drake jamming signal. Well, Mark has decided to move on from China, this time on the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea, a country that he's visited a number of times, and even myself. It's one of those places that, if you ever have a chance to visit, I would strongly suggest you do it, because it is, well, out of this world. Today's edition of the program is going to be part one of a two-part program with Mark Fahey, who I had a chance to speak to this past week about a new book that he's written, which, if you're a fan of North Korea and North Korean radio, is a book you certainly want to, locate. It's called Behind the Curtain. Now, before we talk about the book today in part one, I wanted to begin by asking him, what is this interest in North Korea?
Oh, it's the same interest, actually. So it goes back to being a teenager that stumbled across shortwave radio in the Cold War period and enjoying Radio Berlin International, Radio Tirana, Radio Moscow, Radio Peking, of course. And in there as well was Radio Pyongyang, as it was called at the time, from North Korea. So it was a general interest in propaganda as an art form in many ways. The content interested me, but also just the techniques and the presentation of utopian societies and happy workers and so on. I found totally fascinating.
But the North Koreans have a very, I mean, when I think back of the broadcasts that I used to listen to from Radio Moscow and the old Radio Peking and the former Radio Berlin International and others, and even Radio Havana Cuba and so on, North Korea is very different.
Sure, it's actually not. it's not a true communist or socialist state. It's now a religious state really, with the religion being Kimism, based on Kim Il Sung. It still remains now very rigid in the messaging and what you'll hear on from North Korea. And obviously visiting there is fascinating as well. So Firedrake was an interest in China, and North Korea was an interest as well.
You took it one step further. You decided to go visit North Korea.
Yeah. So I'd always been interested in North Korea and once you earn some money and you earn some freedom, then what I decided to do was spend a lot of time traveling around to places and radio stations that I'd once listened to or got a QSL card from or wrote to. And I never really suspected that I'd go to North Korea, but eventually there was a Faithless, that UK band Faithless, there was a film clip to one of their songs, which was based on, was there were clips from the Ariane Games, the mass games in Pyongyang. And it was just such an amazing film clip that I thought, I've got to go and see this for myself. And then this drew a whole fascination. If I'm going to go to North Korea, then it would be great to turn it into a bit of a project to find out more about broadcasting, the mass media and so on. So when I started researching that, you can find plenty to read about human rights, about military build-ups and tensions. But actually, there wasn't that much I could find on the internet or in bookstores about broadcasting, mass media, and the role of propaganda in the media. So decided it's never been documented before fully. I might as well do it.
Now, you did something, of course, that is you're not supposed to bring into North Korea, is a recording device. How did you do that?
Yeah, so I brought in a couple of different things, and so I went a total of four big trips and one small one, and each time took in devices to record and collect data. So what I was interested in getting GPSs into the country, and GPSs are forbidden. Any kind of radio is forbidden, and I obviously wanted to take radios in because I wanted to record and the FM networks and actually record, do band scans of the broadcast band in places like Pyongyang and Kaesong and so on. But I also had an interest in, of course, there's a total unknown factor, which is how well do the outside signals penetrate that curtain, that blockade that North Korea have built around jamming and so on. So also did some band scans in some parts of Korea, quite deliberately listening to outside broadcasters and recording them, how well their signals were received. So this required actually becoming a smuggler.
a spy, actually, a secret agent.
Yeah, so in 2011, which was my first trip, and it was, in my mind, was primarily a scouting trip to see how essentially find out the boundaries, mm-hmm. And what had just how it works. That actually was the only time that I was actually got into trouble, but it was only very light trouble. I was in Paektusan at Mount Paektu, and I saw soldiers disappearing into what looks like a really complex underground network of tunnels, and went and photographed the entrance to the tunnels and thought that I was in the middle of nowhere, thought that I wasn't seen, but ended up with a rifle in my back and marched down a hill and my SD card and my camera deleted. But apart from that, and actually they gave me back the SD card. So once I got back to Australia, I recovered all the photographs that they thought they deleted. But that was the only time I really was, as far as I know, detected, and I just kind of worked on the assumption that surely I can talk my way out of it. Maybe that's naive, but that's what I was thinking.
Now, I remember some pictures that you posted from your hotel room. And, I mean, it's very common to have these, like, built-in radios in hotels. And the one in your hotel was very strange indeed.
Yeah, so this, if you spend time in hotels, and particularly if you do business travel or do any travel and you end up in a hotel, a typical feature is between the two beds in the room is a console with a radio built into that console. And this is just something you see in pretty well every hotel in the world, except for North Korea. So in North Korea, so if you do see a device like this in North Korea, it's usually just a couple of buttons which supposedly would have piped hotel music, but of course don't work, just like most of these radios around the world. They quite often don't work. Mm-hmm. I went to one hotel in Hamhung, and it newly been renovated. The city actually had only relatively recently opened up again for outsiders to visit. And right between two beds was this pristine radio console. It looked really impressive, with a tuning dial for FM and AM. And I couldn't believe it. It was so weird that as soon as I walked in the room, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So went and thought, great, this is too easy. I'm going to listen to the radio. Turned it on. Of course, nothing worked. So then spent a couple of hours pulling apart the bedside console and took photographs of why it actually doesn't work. So the whole speaker had been removed. All of the audio cabling had been, the power transformer was cut and so on. So they'd gone to an effort of putting in the room this whole piece of furniture, which gives the impression of a connection to the outside world and kind of like a gives the impression of normality and maybe even luxury. But there was no, that device is never intended to work. And the funniest thing was that the following morning on checkout, I mentioned it at the reception desk that my radio wasn't working. They assured me that they would have it fixed so the next guest wouldn't be so disappointed.
Mm-hmm. When you were there, I mean, you said that you were tuning into broadcasts from outside of North Korea. What is available and is it easy to hear?
So actually, my main interest was, first thing I noticed was that in cities there was jamming. So in Pyongyang there's a large amount of jamming across the AM band. And then looking at those frequencies, you can work out what they're actually jamming. So the majority of them are South Korean medium wave stations. Then at night you could hear Chinese and Japanese stations, but they were not, you couldn't hear them during the daytime, but at night when they propagated, you could hear them. But they obviously weren't considered to be strong enough to be targeted for jamming. But once I left cities like Pyongyang, usually you didn't find jamming on the bands. And so I became quite interested to how well South Korean radio penetrated into North Korea. So particularly in south of Pyongyang, from Pyongyang, and you don't have to move that far south of Pyongyang, and as you move south, you can hear pretty easily the FM commercial stations and KBS stations from South Korea. And it appears that once you leave an area where, an urban area where there'll be educated classes and elites, there isn't any local jamming at all. Of mm-hmm. course, the North Koreans heavily jam shortwave, but when it comes to FM and medium wave, only in the cities that appeared to happen.
I'm not sure if you're aware, there's a city in China called Dandong in Liaoning province that borders North Korea, which I've been to a number of times. And there are quite a few North Koreans in that city because it's one of the entry points for trade between China and North Korea. And quite a few Chinese have told me that it's also one of the main smuggling ports. And they said sometimes, well, actually quite often, you'll find North Korean smugglers that will want and do smuggle in shortwave radios from China, like Texans and Deegans and everything, which I found quite fascinating. And I asked this Chinese guy who who works for a government department. He said, is China aware of this? And he said, oh, yeah, China's very aware of this, but China decides not to do anything.
Yeah. I think that there's a fair bit of outside media being received and consumed inside North Korea. So maybe radio is still difficult because there's jamming and so on. But one thing that is definitely making a big impact, and strangely enough, this month there was a good documentary on NHK about this word. This was included in the documentary, which is about how widely spread now USB sticks and SD cards and with media on them are getting inside the DPRK, and this has become quite an issue. So this is, of course, what's on those USB sticks and SD cards isn't necessarily content promoting democracy or values like that. It's quite often soap operas from South Korea or Western movies. But that's just... The regime, of course, will feel that certainly undermines their position. The more that the general public learn of life on the outside, the harder it is for their legitimacy to be maintained.
Well, in the 1980s, especially in communist Europe, it was very common to have smuggled movies on VHS tapes that were circled around in countries like the GDR and Romania and so on. You know, what I found fascinating was a few months ago I interviewed a woman from an organization that actually helps get some of these SD cards and USB sticks smuggled into North Korea. And she told me one of the most popular ones that they've had in most recent years was a movie that caused a lot of controversy when it was released. The movie The Interview. She said they sent out something like 30,000 copies of this movie.
Yeah,
USB sticks, because I mean something I don't think. I mean, a movie like The Interview, which is actually hysterical, but what's interesting is, you know, there's parts of the movie that I think they got from actual facts.
Oh, and watching that movie, because I've watched it quite a few times, and watched the very first time was that Christmas Day or soon after, where it kind of got leaked as on BitTorrent. Mm-hmm. But seems like it was purposely leaked. But anyway, if you don't know anything about North Korea, it can still be an entertaining movie, of course. But if you know anything about North Korea, almost every 30 seconds there's an inside joke. Whoever's involved in that movie, there are some real people that know North Korea inside out.
Well, the one that I laughed at was where they go to a supermarket and everything is... Because I went to a market in Pyongyang that was just like that. It was immaculate inside and had everything, but you couldn't buy anything. And all the boxes on the shelves were empty.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what's funny, though, Mark, is you tell people this, and they actually... I mean, okay, honestly, it doesn't sound believable, but it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It's just totally, the way it is. It's the craziest place.
Now let's talk about, what do you think is, do you think the propaganda that North Korea puts out is as effective as, let's say, of what the Soviets did or even the Chinese?
I personally don't think it is. It's, of course, I see it through a Western lens, being an Australian, we kind of are a bridge between the British and the Americans, but think you know, similar to both of those cultures. So, North Korean propaganda, the propaganda which they craft for the outside audience, the English speaking audience, it's just so over the top and kind of unbelievable that it almost becomes comedy. So I don't think it's as effective. Well, certainly, but I was much younger, of course, when I was listening to shortwave radio during the Cold War. But at least when I listened to something like Radio Moscow or Radio Tashkent or Radio Peace and Progress, while the delivery might have been stilted and it might have been the formatting might have been a bit more rigid than what I would have heard on my local radio, at least the content was believable. You would you would half believe and think, I wonder how much of this is true, how much isn't. But at least it was plausible. North Korean propaganda, to most outsiders, is just over the top.
Last summer, there's a small improv group that I occasionally will perform with, and we did something on. I prepared something on North Korea, and actually, what the thing is, I didn't write any of the actual words. I took a documentary that was produced by North Korean television on Kim Jong-un. And I used text word per word from that documentary, which they produced in English. And people laughed. I mean, yeah. I wasn't making this stuff up. I took it word per word from this documentary and presented it in the same style that they did. And everybody laughed.
Yeah, it's like, well, when you read in the sentence where they call Obama a monkey and things like this, and it's just like, and you realize that this is the official output from the information organization, the official information organization of a nation. It's hysterical.
There's a piece of music that Radio Pyongyang will occasionally play. It's called Our General is the Best.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard this piece.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine described it as Gilbert and it sounds like a piece by Gilbert and Sullivan, but it's scary. It's just it is just so odd because it really sounds like a Gilbert and Sullivan piece from a musical like The Mikado or The Pirates of Penzance or whatever, but it's just absolutely spooky.
Yeah. I don't think they understand their reasons for propaganda, for sending this information anyway, is complex, but they certainly don't understand their audience. I suppose the only people in the outside world that really receive it well are those members of the Korean Friendship Association, which is scattered around the world, which follow the teachings of Kim Il-sung. But apart from that, I think most people, it's primarily a source of comedy.
We're speaking there to Mark Fahey, author of an ebook entitled Behind the Curtain, and it's available through iTunes. And Mark will be joining us on the program next week to give us a little bit more insight on the book itself. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF to Total Journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect over the next 7 days. So to end off, here's Glenn Hauser. Glenn?
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast. Normal at low latitudes, normal to fair at middle and high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through April 1st, magnetic conditions active to unsettled. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely. MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through April 2nd, solar activity mainly low, only a slight 10% chance of moderate class flares. Geomagnetic activity expected to be mainly unsettled to active, with a slight 20% chance of further minor geomagnetic storms. From FK Janda in Prague of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on April 1st to 4th, 6th, 11th, and 17th. Active to disturbed on April 5th, 7th, and 16th. Quiet on April 8th, 9th, 14th, and 15th. Quiet to unsettled April 10th, 12th, and 18th. Mostly quiet on April 13th and 19th. From SWPC in Boulder, the geomagnetic field unsettled to active until April 6th with ANK indices of 16 and 4 on the 3rd. And G1 minor storm levels likely April 17th to 18th. Peaking at 25 and 5. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 from April 7th to 16th. Solar flux dropping from 75 April 2nd to 71 April 5th to 14th. Back up to 75 by April 18th. William Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting across the Gulf of Mexico from Texas March 31st and April 1st. Increasingly off West Africa from March 31st, off Western Australia from April 1st, off the coasts of Namibia and parts of South Africa, and from Yemen and Somalia to India, and east of India to Bangladesh all week.
Thanks, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of another edition of the program. Just a reminder again, next week on the show, Mark Fahey will be joining us again to talk more about the DPRK and the book that's available in electronic form called Behind the Curtain. So that's next week here on the program. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. We are going to be, by the way, giving our website, pcjmedia.com, a complete makeover, and that's going to be available on May 1st. So a new website is coming in 1 month's time. There is something that I just realized right now. It's April 1st. We didn't do an April Fool's joke, but we did talk about the DPRK. I wonder if there's any connection. Who knows? Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. 73 and 88 to the ladies. Bye-bye.